if it was you, but that...
Okay, well, why did you think...
It's going to determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us on the line Bill Sardi, who's a health journalist and certainly is very, very well informed about so much that's going on today. And one of the most difficult things for the average person to believe is that there could be people within our government, within the CDC and the U.S. Public Health Service and the NIH and the other federal departments that know that we are harming our children with certain of the vaccines we have given them in the past or we're giving in the present time, and continue covering up that fact. Who would want to hurt a child? And yet, of course, we know that almost 1 in 6 American children has some sort of a neurodevelopmental abnormality. The incidence of diabetes and asthma, the incidence of allergies and autoimmune disease is increasing at a devastating rate among our children. And the question is why, and with that as a background, Bill Sardi, thank you so very much for being with us.
We have the smoking gun.
Okay.
We have the evidence. Of course, you know who's providing it, Dr. Geyer and his son, the Genetic Centers of America, Silver Spring, Maryland. And, of course, what he's citing in the medical literature, the August issue of Journal of Toxicology and Environmental Health, is to document this down in cement so we have it, we can refer to it, and see that so many of these connections with these vaccines and, of course, the autism and the autoimmune diseases. This is the big area of concern. And what he did is he went back and looked at the diphtheria tetanus pertussis. That's DTP. And then there's another one, diphtheria tetanus pertussis Haemophilus influenza. So that's DTPH. Well, there's a different amount of mercury, thimerosal, they call it, in each of these. So he wondered if the children who got DTP differed in the amount of neurological problems they had, mental retardation, speech disorders, autism, infantile spasms, these kind of things, with the ones who had the DTPH. So he goes back through the records. This is 1994 to 1998. And there were significantly increased odds for these problems in the DTP vaccines compared to the other one. And so they're documenting for the first time that this is related to this mercury, not the contents necessarily in there otherwise. And then he, in the medical science monitoring of June of this year, he's now showing a connection also with this, and documenting it down so that we know that they have misled us all this time.
And, of course, the tragedy is that so many of these children will never have an opportunity to improve, especially, of course, at the CDC and the Public Health Service and the establishment have their way, because they're doing everything they can to discourage the treatment, very effective treatment, almost miraculous treatment, which returns many of these children to almost normal. But they don't want that. And why would that possibly be? We'll be back in just a moment here with Bill Sardi talking about the terrible things that have been done to our children and who would want to hurt a child. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Bill Sardi, and we're talking about some new work that's been done by Dr. Mark Geyer, who's been a frequent guest here on Radio Liberty. And Dr. Mark Geyer has done an analysis of this, of the various things having to do with certain vaccines, and has very effectively shown that the mercury content of these vaccines has had a devastating effect on the minds of our children. Bill, would you mind reviewing what you just said, because we've added some new listeners who didn't hear what you said before?
The first indicting report from the Journal of Toxicology and Environmental Health for August of 2006, and it's an advanced issue. And, of course, Dr. Geyer is showing that the diphtheria tetanus pertussis vaccine differs in its mercury content than the diphtheria tetanus pertussis Haemophilus influenza. One covers three, the other one covers four potential diseases. So,
was there a lot more thimerosal in one than the other?
Absolutely. This is about 50 micrograms difference, and this is a considerable amount, and so on. So what he's able to do is see if there's a difference in the neurological disorders, the autism, speech disorders, mental retardation, infantile spasms, thinking abnormalities, and he documents and cites this now, that there was a significant difference based on these two vaccines. So,
in other words, the more mercury you got, the more neurological damage was done. Would that be right?
That's right. Then he goes on in the Journal of Medical Science Monitoring, the June issue for 2006, and shows that as they started to withdraw this thimerosal preservative from the childhood vaccines, that there was a decrease in these kinds of disorders. So he's showing you both. One had more, and now he's showing you another statistical analysis. The point is, why is Dr. Geyer doing all this, and where is our government, and where is somebody? He's doing this all on his own. Where's the funding? Where's the analysis? There's no one checking the safety of these vaccines.
I think they know exactly what they're doing. Of course, basically what has happened, since they have withdrawn childhood vaccines, the mercury from childhood vaccines, the incidence of new cases of autism here in California has begun to drop off. And it's a significant decrease. In other words, when you take the mercury out of the vaccines, as we have in California, and then you moderate, you're getting less and less cases. Now, any case is too many. This has been one of the greatest cover-ups of all time, because Dr. Geyer has actually gotten some of the emails back and forth within the CDC under the Freedom of Information Act. They know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want the American people to know that they're destroying the minds of our children. Dan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon is Bill Sardin, acquainting us with the latest work by Dr. Mark Geyer, who's been a frequent guest here at Radio Liberty. So pick up the story, Bill. And the thing is, the question is, what can be done about it? Certainly the average person trusts the government. They trust their doctor, and the doctor trusts the American, he was a pediatrician, he trusts the leaders of the American Academy of Pediatrics, who've been covering up for the harm we've been doing to our children for years. Because it seems that just as cream gets to the top of the milk bottle, why, of course, I found with an organized medicine, we often found that the people who are in key positions, whether it be in the CMA or in other medical organizations or the AMA, were usually the people who were there who had an agenda. And often that agenda was not to preserve the health either of the public or of our children. So what can be done?
Well, the shame on the American Academy of Pediatrics. As the storyline goes, of course, there will be a few adverse reactions with any vaccine program. And so with all that, the news media is told, don't put to any of these few reactions on the front page of your newspapers. Don't do any of this because we will lose confidence in the vaccine program. And then there will be massive disease. And, of course, people will lose faith. The vaccine program. But with this very thinking, and with the legislation which makes it possible for vaccine manufacturers to have no financial liability in all this, there's no possibility in the vaccine program at all. If there's a hot lot, this is a lot of production lot of the vaccines, and it may have too much live virus in it or something, then this is all covered up. You see, you can't find out anything with here. Everything is covered up. There is no, when there is malfeasance, when there is poorly produced product, when no one's responsible, your children are paying a lifelong price. And, of course, this is the giant cover-up that's kind of going on. I agree. Okay, let's not sensationalize one child who may have had an adverse reaction, but we're now getting to more than one child. This is
course, when you're dealing with one child that takes in some sort of neurodevelopmental abnormality, and they have a range of diabetes, asthma, autoimmune disease, and other diseases referable to it, this effort to prime the immune system for vaccination and immunity. I mean, we're seeing an awful lot of sick children in the United States, far sicker than we're seeing in other countries, and we do not see this amount of sickness among Amish children where they don't take the vaccines. And I would think we would want a healthy time rather than those that are being experimented on by people who have a very macabre sense of humor.
Well, it's not just these side effects. I mean, the Amish children are not getting the diseases either. Now, probably because they don't come in contact with a lot of others, but the issue is they should be pretty healthy without all this, quote, protection. And as you brought up the issue of autoimmunity, so we can get the audience to understand, autoimmunity is where your own immune system is against yourself. Something has made the immune system the haywire. And these are conditions like rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, certain forms of multiple sclerosis, and so on. So they have these disorders. Well, where did they come from? How come they come on in the adult years? What's going on? We think a lot of medicines, particularly vaccines, are setting researchers in Sweden first writing last year, talking about autoimmune effects of thimerosal, that's the mercury, in mice studies in compounds and autoimmunity, again, the same group in Sweden. And now they're writing this recent issue, Toxicology and Applied Pharmacology. And this is this month. And the title is Spontaneous Autoimmune Disease in Mice by Treatment with Thimerosal, ethyl mercury.
And I think for our listeners out there, the thimerosal is what they've been putting in our childhood vaccines for many years. And, of course, the more they put in and the more vaccines you got, the more thimerosal you got, and that's when the epidemic of autism began. But they also put it into the influenza vaccine that they came to the elderly, and that's why there is almost 1,000% increase in those foolish people who've been taking the influenza vaccine with the thimerosal in it over those who don't, and the same with
older. Well, we never tell one person with rheumatoid arthritis, don't get that shot. So don't get mercury in your system. Now, what these doctors in Sweden are saying, the maximum cumulative dose of mercury from thimerosal and vaccine before 1999 was estimated at between 200 and 275 micrograms in a 6-month to 2-year-old child.
Now, what's the safe level?
Well, they're going on. By the cautious way of calculation, using an average period of only one day, that is, where you would have gotten this over what period, okay? Single day exposure of 10 to 15 micrograms, now that's, you'd get a lot more in one shot, okay? One vaccination. Is what you should have done, they're saying 10 to 15. This is clearly within the dosage range observed to trigger autoimmune reaction. Everyone just heard that. It's within the dosage range they just demonstrated, and they're supposed to have a safety factor of 10. That is, the mercury is supposed to be 10 times lower than the observed in animals for humans. So what we're doing is we're exposing humans to doses of mercury that set off in animals. And that dose should be 10 times lower in a human than in close. I mean, we have no safety margin here at all. And it says may theoretically be similar to the dose generated in infant vaccines containing thimerosal using a cautious calculation. They're being very conservative, and they're still showing this. So where is the front page article about this in USA Today, New York Times? Not a word. What about Dr. Geyer's work? Not a word. This is what you're seeing. You're not being told of these things, of course, because it would create a lack of confidence in the vaccination program.
Well, I think we need a lack of confidence because until there's an outcry from the public, we're going to continue damaging the minds of our children.
What other theory do they have? Why are they not raising $25 million to find whatever other cause of autism in this plague that is on us now. They're not. They know it's coming from this. And shame on the American Academy of Pediatrics. You're going to take your children in this year. And we just had a neighbor, a child that was sick, go in for a sick visit. And while they're there, got a flu shot. You're not supposed to give shots, vaccines, on a sick visit. Only on a well visit, because you're complicating the whole issue. And, of course, we're trying to tell the mom and dad, don't do that. And, of course, you're now going to see the very young children down to 6 months of age. And the pediatricians seem mindless in this whole thing. They just keep giving more and more and more. And I think I sent you a little brochure of the 26 vaccines my child would have gotten. I have a two-year-old here at home. And the 26 rounds of these things, all with mercury in them. Some of them say they're mercury-free. They're just less mercury. I'm trying to tell you that it's mercury-free. So we have this terrible problem going on. It's our children that are suffering. And, where's the conscience? I don't know where we are. I don't know who to grab. It's just terrible.
Well,
no
of course, Dr. Ayoub has this whole idea of giving pregnant women even the first trimester an influenza shot that has a full dose of thimerosal in it, and of course I'm still concerned about you. You shouldn't be eating tuna fish in it. The tuna fish, the mercury in tuna fish or swordfish, is bound to proteins, and of course it's very hard. It's not most of it. It's absorbed. They make a big fuss about the mercury in fish, which is not readily absorbed, and they're injecting it directly into this woman, and it goes directly across the placental barrier into the minds of her child, and especially during the first trimester when that brain is just beginning to form, the maximum time when you can do damage. In fact, Dr. Ayoub told me that when his wife went in to her obstetrician, and the obstetrician said to his wife during the first trimester, well, you know, the CDC recommends an influenza shot. We'll just go ahead and give you one. And Dr. Ayoub whipped out one of the papers he had written on this and said, you really know what you're doing? And the obstetrician said, well, I'm just doing what the CDC said. And ladies and gentlemen, that's the problem. We have a real problem with the Centers for Disease Control. I've been there. And I will tell you, there's some people there who do not have the best interests of the American people at heart.
Well, as we go on with this vaccination story, we certainly have to lead our story all the way up right to the door of the flu, because the flu vaccine now being pushed on the young children this year, we hear all about the avian flu, and they've got something up their sleeve this year. There's just something big and looming every time. You just go to you type in so you can get every report on flu. Every center in the world, every news organization continuing to hype that there is a looming, impending, inevitable flu pandemic going to hit us this year. And why? How would they know for certain? And, of course, we're making more flu vaccine than any other year. How are they going to scare us all into this? Well, we can see they're already doing.
And, of course, the plague hits with our minds. I mean, hardly a day goes by where there's not a new report out about the avian flu. And it's not a matter of when, but not a matter of if, but when this deadly epidemic is going to strike us and kill 50% of the population. And over again. And this is all part of a propaganda program, and that is being carefully coordinated with the Council on Foreign Relations and their spokesmen, and you read their magazines, and there are three articles about the danger of avian flu, even more than about Iraq. Why? They're up to no good. Well, Bill, go right ahead.
Well, we do see writers carrying the story on May the 18th. More Americans should get flu shots. They're preparing more. They usually give out about 95 million doses. This year they've got 120 million planned. Understand we now have a population of 300 million. Because most of the population is unvaccinated, how could they say we're at risk for a pandemic? Yet this is exactly what they do. Remember now, they need to order this vaccine. government places the order, and then the government is the public relations agency to scare the public into rolling up their sleeves and paying the $10 or $15 down at the drugstore or grocery store. And as soon as the little flu shots are being offered, but then, of course, everyone lines up, signs up, gives their $10 or $15, and the drug companies all get their money back, and this is how it's made. So if the flu shots are not used, the drug companies incur a loss. So they're planning on really beating the drum, apparently, this year for a flu vaccine that we can't figure out where or how it's effective or that it works.
And if you read the studies on so much of this, you know, there's very little flu vaccine other than the fact that most people, or many people who take the flu vaccine, come down with the flu. I don't take the flu vaccine. I very seldom get the flu. And you know, how many times have those people out there in the audience known somebody who went in for a flu shot the next couple of days where they had all the symptoms of influenza? So, and then, of course, I'll never forget a couple of years ago when, of course, they had a lot of the vaccine and they couldn't get anybody to take it, so they started this story, we're running out, you better get down there, we're running out, boy, you better get down there in a hurry before it's all gone. And it's amazing how gullible the people were. They actually went down and took the influenza vaccine. And if you look at the studies on this, there is very little evidence of that it's really beneficial. It's going to save many lives. And when they tell you that 35,000 people die every year of influenza and pneumonia, they say the pneumonia part of it very basic, because awfully, there's very few people really die of influenza if they have a normal immune system. Isn't that true, Bill?
Well, this is true, and we do have vulnerable populations, particularly elderly people and so on. It's interesting. What do doctors know? They're trying to say that pretty many of the people in the population get vaccinated, but not too many doctors. That's kind of interesting. But, you know, we see these scare tactics. You know, here's Megan O'Connell writing for United Press International, saying an avian influenza pandemic could kill millions of people, cripple economies, bring international trade and travel to a standstill. You've heard all this already. And they're spending money as if it's underway. We're now spending more money on a bird flu. It's just a flu that cannot be transferred to humans in its present form. And we're spending more money on that than we are on the major diseases that are killing people, malaria, etc. These kind of things. Starvation is rampant in the world. And, you know, if this kind of panic gets going, they're going to pull away and kill a great many of the poultry birds that we have, people rely on for food. This could be a way of starving people, really, in this panic. Dr. Mark Siegel, New York critic, written a few books. The False Bird Flu Scare is his article he's written in May of this year. And he goes on to say what we're doing is it just can't infect humans in the current form of the bird flu.
Well, that's all. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Bill was just saying that, you know, the current form of the of this H5N1 avian flu virus, it cannot affect the average individual. It does not go from bird to human and from human to human. I mean, there have been maybe 160, maybe 200 cases throughout the world in 3 years when it went from birds to humans. Only a very, very few instances when it, of course, it spread from human to human, and that seemed to be an entirely different type of virus. In fact, nobody even knows where that virus came from, because it wasn't like the regular avian flu virus. And then, of course, we find out that the Centers for Disease Control has a laboratory that is actually taking genes from the most communicable form of influenza and putting them into the avian flu virus. In other words, they're taking things that would actually make this a deadly disease that could be spread human to human, and they're working in the laboratory to accomplish that goal. We have to ask why, when in the past things have gotten out of these secure laboratories, as Bill mentioned in another program we've done. We know that the anthrax would kill the number of people right after the 9/11. Typical. That anthrax, 6 or 7 or 8 people died, and probably 20 or 30 were infected. That came from a military laboratory, so things do get out of these secure laboratories. Oh, it got out. But, you know, could it get out of the laboratory the CDC has? And why are they trying to make it more virulent? And if you take that, we have articles from both the UP and the Washington Times that tell that story. Pick up that idea, Bill.
Well, certainly the big one that's getting attention now is the one in Indonesia where the family of 5, 6, 7, 8, whatever it is there, seem all to have had the flu, and of course they're saying it transferred from one family member then to the next and the next, and that this may be proof that it's beginning to mutate and so on. Now, as we follow the picture, and I hope you're following it carefully now with me, is that Nature magazine, you know, there's some biological stuff around. Show us the evidence. Please send us this and that. They're asking the World Health Organization, would you mind sending us the genetic sequences of those blood samples so we can check it? And it says here, part of the reason it's unclear among virologists whether this is being transferred from human to human is that the World Health Organization is withholding the genetic data. Why would they withhold the data? Why is that? Why are they withholding it? Well, so far, what they've shown is the virus did not evolve into a pandemic strain. The combination of mutations was never even enough to allow its general spread beyond that close family in Indonesia. So they can't figure out why it would go even from member to member in the strains in the way it was. The virus isolates from 6 of the 8 family members have been sequenced, but the World Health Organization has not released the data. Why? Now, there's an investigator at Recombinomics. It's a company here in California, in the United States, and, of course, they're tracking all this down. And what they point out is the failure of 20 human isolates, these are the blood samples, to match the 50 avian blood samples from birds. They're pointing out that the birds are not the source of the H5N1 cases in Indonesia. With all this massive defense against the birds and the possibility that bird flu could mutate and become something quite pandemic in humans, and yet we haven't got anything that's going on in humans that matches what's going on in the birds.
And, of course, we have to then ask, where does this human variation come from? You know, if it's not coming from the birds, where is it coming from?
H5N1, of course, is something that humans have been exposed to before. What they're seeing is that, for some reason, this year it could mutate. How would they know? And that, therefore, it could become the dreaded, like, Spanish flu that we have no immunity towards and so on. And therefore, it could cause the pandemic. So with all of this could, should, might, could, would, and all this, we're spending billions of dollars to prepare for something, and we're all the drug companies are making all this money, all these vaccines, medicines, Tamiflu, amantadine, and these are all the medicines. Billions of dollars with no evidence they even would work or save.
It's not simply by accident that one of the major beneficiaries of this is the man who led us into the war in Iraq. His name is Donald Rumsfeld. And he was the president of the corporation that developed Tamiflu, which, of course, supposedly is going to save us all from the dreaded avian flu. And he still holds a stock there. And, of course, he's made millions and millions of dollars from this. The efforts is planned program to frighten everybody in the world into the danger of Tamiflu. We're all going to die, and of course, Tamiflu is going to save it. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Bill Sardi, and we're talking about the massive hysteria that is being created intentionally by the controlled media to frighten us about the danger of avian flu. And, of course, I thought it was really so interesting, as Dr. pardon me, as Bill Sardi pointed out, that there's something very strange about the makeup of this virus that was isolated from this family in Indonesia. So this did seem to be quite different than the regular avian flu. Do we know anything about this? How much information has been released by the World Health Organization?
We're just not getting the information. Of course, as I say, we have the sleuths, we have the people who scrutinize all this. Nature Magazine is looking at it, other genetic scientists. They're not releasing the information, and I think it would just cut this whole thing off. I believe it would just stop holding our breath over this whole thing. All we're reading here, I mean, here is New York Times. Avian flu tends to kill youths, young people, just as the 1918 Spanish flu. Study finds, it says.
Because the whole idea is that the young people are much more likely to die than the older people. This is the message they're trying to get out.
Right, and of course, what they're doing is rigging the data. They're trying to say there's a high mortality rate. Apparently, they've gone into China now and realized there's a lot of exposure to fowl and poultry there where they have post-human contact. And apparently, even though it's not a virus that really affects humans, they can get the virus and develop antibodies to it. Apparently, you can have it. It might not even cause a rise in your temperature or anything. But apparently, millions of Chinese already have immunity to the H5N1 so-called virus that could, the avian virus that could mutate into this deadly form. They've already developed antibodies against it, so natural immunity works, and not so much the vaccine. We don't have the vaccine for this for humans yet. And, of course, what they're trying to say is all these young people will die if this gets going and the mutation occurs. Of course, they're rigging the deck here because of the few people that have gotten this, that's 100 or 200 people now that have this case of the flu, this type of the flu, what we're seeing is it may not be this avian flu at all because they're not releasing the genetic sequences for us to look. It doesn't look like it really even is. But even if we assume that's true, what they're doing is...
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Bill Sardi, and we're simply Bill is pointing out that in China they've done large numbers of the Chinese people, and they have antibodies to the H5N1 virus. In other words, they've got the infection. They may not even have known they got an infection. They have natural immunity to it. They developed antibodies to it. So when they tell us that it has a 50% mortality, they're not being forthright at all. In other words, why would they try to fight this event when apparently there are tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of Chinese, maybe many, many more antibodies to this, and they never even were sick from it. So there obviously is a planned program to fight this to death. And there are a lot of persons here who honestly believe this is a threat. But if you look at it objectively, and of course you've been through this before, as I was, we can realize how everything was manipulated, our reality was manipulated, we were lied to at every turn, nothing logically was done, and of course an awful lot of people did die of that disease and are still dying unnecessarily, and yet now they've created a disease that has very low mortality overall. You know, after all, this virus has been around since 1959, and we find out that we've got about 160 people have died so far. That's not really very, very a lethal disease as far as I'm concerned.
Well, they're saying it might mutate and then become this highly transmissible form. Now, this could have happened at any time in history. Why now? But what they're doing is trying to say it's very lethal, and what they're how they do this is certainly very young people. People in Indonesia, certainly, they're poorly nourished, and you see more of this infection, of course, going on. They don't have the vitamin C, the fortified foods, the clean water, these kinds of things. And, of course, what we're getting, they're counting the lethality, the mortality, in these cases. They're only counting the cases that got to the lower respiratory tract. So they're the serious cases, of which they're just a few. So if they're in the upper respiratory tract, they're not even counting them. Of course, the ones that got to the lower are going to have much more lethal. So it makes it sound like if the masses get this, you'll have the same ratio of everybody's going to get a low respiratory tract into the deeper part of the lung. This isn't true. And so they're making it look more lethal. And, of course, the thing that bothers me is that the biologists know this, the virologists know this, the microbiologists know this, the news reporters all know this, and yet they continue out. And, of course, this means we're talking about health propaganda. That's what we're talking about. Here's Dr. Fred Rossner, a well-known doctor, Mount Sinai Health Services in New York, and he's writing in the journal, the Israeli Medical Association Journal of June of this year. And he's pointing out that, fact, fear, fiction about the avian pandemic, everyone's saying it's inevitable, it's a question of not if, but when, and so on. We don't have a vaccine. It looks like some 10 years away to develop a good vaccine for this. And yet he says perhaps the most exciting news is the recent demonstration by an Israeli team that elderberry extract will fight and conquer flu.
Isn't that amazing? Elderberry extract.
I mean, it sounds so simple, and we're all ready to laugh. I mean, what?
I bet, of course, it's a lot cheaper than.
This National Vaccine Information Center, this is Barbara Lowe Fisher. If you're not acquainted with that and you want more follow-up information, go to Vaccine Information Center online, nvic.org, and she's pointing out how every year the FDA and the CDC drums up this whole thing about being so many people dying from the flu, and it's regardless of the vaccination rates, they're always saying 36,000 Americans die every year of the flu. And she said she attended an FDA meeting where they admitted in 2003 that only 20% of all the flu-like illnesses were actually caused by the influenza virus. So, in the first place, you cut everything down by 80%, whatever number you hear, because it may be flu-like, but was it influenza? Was it that a vaccine would stop? No. So, are there really 36,000 bodies they count? We find out they're estimates. They are not real body counts. Are they people that died of the flu? What they combine the pneumonia that happens and occurs and that happens to kill a lot of elderly people, especially the invalids who can't get around, and their lungs fill up with fluid when you're not moving around. And they count these deaths in there, and then they estimate how many are really flu-related. We don't know. They're not doing all this. There's not a body count. We're not in some horrendous risk of dying. And, of course, we're concerned about the mutations. Well, you can actually stop the mutation if the flu gets in your body and wants to mutate into this more virulent form. And you have enough selenium, a little trace mineral in your body, this is research done at the University of North Carolina, why then you'll keep it from mutating into the virulent form. Now, the virulent form will fill up your lungs with an over-responsive reaction. Your lungs will fill up with fluid, and like the Spanish flu of 1918, you could succumb to this within hours. But selenium, and this is well documented, of course, your researchers pass this information on. Where is the news reporters that selenium stops the mutations? Not a word about it. You see, this is where you get to really be convinced that the news media is working in league with all this to run this whole campaign, they're just hyping up for some big world event. They're going to get the whole world to roll up the sleeves for the flu shot this year, not just the United States. And I don't know whether this is a drill, whether they're going to get the world accustomed to this, and then sooner or later we'll have a bad vaccine. I don't know. But I'm certainly concerned with the falsehoods that are going on, the cover-ups, the World Health Organization not telling us where all this is, and they're not giving us the genetic sequences so we can track this down, whether these human cases are really coming from bird flu. Remember that it was researchers on their own who had to track down the anthrax virus, anthrax bacterium after 9/11. And, of course, the government wasn't forthcoming in helping us with that. And we tracked it back down to a laboratory here in the United States, a U.S. military laboratory. So apparently the anthrax that was exposed in those letters that went to NBC News and Congressmen and so on, it somehow escaped or someone stole it from the U.S. Army military.
Remember, they were Democratic congressmen, only Democrats.
That's right. So somehow it found its way there. But what we're trying to say is that, you know, we have the kind of investigators, the kind of Sherlock Holmes biologically, who can go track all this down. You can go see the footprints where these things come from. And, of course, we can see all this. It was a Japanese last year who were pointing out that you're saying that the bird flu came here to Japan, but they couldn't find any evidence that any bird flocks, the strain that was in Japan, did not come from where they said it came from. There's no way it could have gotten to Japan unless somebody went on an airplane there, a human being, and started to spread it. What's what they were trying to point out. Somebody intentionally started to spread the bird flu in the bird flocks in Japan because it did not come from the migrating birds. So they're trying to point this out, and they can track this down genetically, and they can grab these birds and get a blood sample and begin to track all this down. So, you know, it's not making any sense. It's looking more like a charade. But this goes on and on and on. And, of course, you know, now it turns out one of the, this is the British Medical Journal here this July, and pointing out one of the cases of SARS that they had, the severe acute respiratory syndrome in China, that was in 2003. One of those cases was actually the avian flu. And so, do we see an avian flu outbreak here in China? We don't see this. So, I mean, apparently humans are getting it. They're developing antibodies to it. You can maybe get a little bit sick to it. But we're just not getting the truth. And I'm trying to point out that what you're reading, what you're seeing, all of this is just somehow some sort of a campaign to soften up the public in some way, to get the shots, to run around in fear. Now they have all of these, it's almost comical. They're trying to tell us, what if your pet birds get this? What if your pet cat gets this? You know, this is kind of interesting. No flu virus in recorded history has ever been able to make a cat sick, and yet they're telling us that cats carry this now. Now, the only way you could have done that is mutated intentionally and do it, because nature's never been able to do it.
And I think that's really so interesting, Bill, because they have developed techniques. There are a lot of certainly viruses that infect animals, and they don't infect humans. But what they've done in the laboratory is they've taken these viruses and put them in human cells until they would affect human beings. And this is where some of these terrible new diseases are coming from. In fact, you never, for instance, saw HIV in chimpanzees in the wild. You only found it in laboratory chimpanzees. Well, now they've found it in the wilds, but they don't mention they've actually released some of the laboratory chimpanzees into the wild. But for years, the only place you found this terrible disease that has killed so many people was in laboratory animals. And you have to ask yourself, why?
Well, it certainly is an oddity, and of course we have all these things going on that just don't make any sense to it. Where are our news reporters? These are biology trained people. They certainly know well enough when they see it, and yet this is exactly what we're getting. The public is getting propaganda. That's what we're getting. We're just trying to expose it to you. Believe me, if there's a real risk here, I'd certainly be trying to tell you about it. We just can't find it, neither can a lot of other people.
Well, you know, I think it's so interesting. The thing that first got me started on my odyssey 44 years ago was a realization that the media was lying to me 44 years ago. And I would hope that our listeners out there would note all of these articles on the bird flu and see how they are coordinated and how this idea of it's not a matter of if we're going to have this deadly pandemic that's going to kill millions and millions and millions and millions of people. It's a matter of when it's going to hit. Sooner or later it's going to hit. And this idea of inevitability, they're playing games with our mind. And once you recognize that and you realize it's in the news magazines, it's on television, it's in the newspapers, it's on radio, once you recognize that, you can see what they're doing.
Well, Dr. Lawrence Brocksmeyer in New York he has a big article just published in Medical Hypotheses. And what he's speculating is that possibly even the 1918 Spanish flu was not really the flu, that maybe it was tuberculosis. After all, tuberculosis strikes the lungs, the influenza strikes the lungs. And he's pointing out a lot of these people had tuberculosis. The young people came back from fighting World War One. They didn't have antibiotics as yet. And, of course, this is what we got, this kind of a problem. And they think it was confusion at the time. The number of deaths due to tuberculosis dropped dramatically after 1918. So we think either they both had the influenza virus and the bacterium, the tuberculosis bacterium, or they just had tuberculosis. But we think that humanity is overlooking a stealth bacterium and therefore unable to really conquer some of these deaths and so on that we really see. And so we think that tuberculosis is the cause of cancer, it's the cause of Crohn's disease, it's the cause of Parkinson's disease. It's just tuberculosis in the lungs, but the tubercular, it's actually a spore. And it's a mycobacterium, meaning very small bacterium. And it can look like a spore, it can look like a virus. It's kind of a stealth kind of a player. And it can be in your body for years before it begins to cause problems. And it can get into any organ, that is the brain and the liver and the kidneys, doesn't matter where it is, and then it can cause problems. And we're now seeing cases of cancer where, like in the lung, we see that tuberculosis and cancer there at the same time. And it doesn't matter, wherever you go in the body, you see this in a lot of reports. And we think possibly one of the triggers of cancer is actually just the bacterium. And we're missing it. And, of course, that means antibiotics could cure it. And, of course, this would be, a big advance if we understood how to treat and cure cancer and how we can have this stealth bacterium in our body for years and years and years. And this is why you see nature working so well and the antibiotics failing. Man-made antibiotics, the germs develop resistance against them. Later, we have no way of making them work. And then we say that this is a highly lethal disease, when it wasn't at all if you just gave something natural, where they're like the garlics, the oil of oreganos, the elderberry syrups, and so on. Because these things will get at these things, and there's no germ resistance. So these aren't lethal at all if you use nature's remedies for them. So apparently, if they can't make a buck off of this by their drugs and so on. So this, it looks like they're hiding a lot of this information from us. It looks like having home remedies at home may be a stronger defense against this than we can even imagine. And I know there's probably no way to get everybody's blood pressure down if they start rattling the cage, crying wolf over this flu epidemic that's coming this year. So if you're still concerned, why, go get your garlic and go get your fresh garlic, go get the oil of oregano, go get selenium, vitamin C, vitamin D, all of these things that you're going to need to boost your immune system, and then you'll have it at hand. Use it every day, and you'll be healthier for it, and it's probably the best thing you can do.
And, of course, the major thing is to have a good supply on hand, because if anything ever did happen, and I'm not saying it's going to happen, but could it be that something would get out of a secure laboratory? Has it happened in the past? Yes. Are there people there who might have a different worldview? Yes, there really are. And they're obviously going to a great deal of time to mobilize the media for a purpose. And this course is Edward Bernays so many years ago in 1928 when he wrote the book Propaganda. We are governed, our minds are molded, our tastes formed or ideas suggested, largely never heard of. So I really believe, Bill, you're absolutely right. There's been an organized, coordinated effort to convince us of the danger of the bird flu. And it's up to no good.
Under Project BioShield, this is the government, federal government program, they've given $1 billion to one manufacturer of an anthrax vaccine. It isn't transmitted from person to person. It's just an infection. You have to get it by touching the stuff. And there's no way you'd have an epidemic, and yet $1 billion has been spent to make an anthrax vaccine of 75 million doses.
And, of course, the trouble is so many people have taken those vaccines, at least in the military, and got deathly ill and never been quite the same again. There's the story of the anthrax vaccine and the terrible demoralization and what happened to so many of the people that took the anthrax vaccine in the military. And many of them, of course, as is covered in our book called Insight into How They Experiment on our Military. We'll be back. Three minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, we do see a worldwide effort by the news media in league with the microbiologists and so on. They're getting a lot of funding. They're getting a lot of money. And, of course, that and built up the system. And so what you're reading and hearing and seeing in tomorrow or next day, somewhere down here, they're going to be hyping this whole get the flu vaccine this year. It's coming soon. September, October, November, this is when it'll all start. There'll be some wild story. There'll be some hyping of this whole thing. They'll be trying to scare us. And, of course, how will you react? The masses, we know how they're going to react. If you're still concerned, there's no medicines. They don't have enough medicines, that even if there were any that worked. And so there'll be panic and this kind of thing. Don't let that all happen to you. Get prepared for this thing. Please become a little insulated from all these reports, maybe even turn off the television. And, just understand, this is all the sales pitch done by the Centers for Disease Control every year. Get everybody to line up, roll up their sleeves, and make money for the vaccine manufacturers. And if you have a side effect, well, God help you. There's going to be no help for you there. And so if it's your young children and you're unwittingly going to the pediatrician, or you go in the emergency room and they just about have the thing in your 6 month arm before mom can even give her consent for it. So then what are you going to do? And of course, I can see the day coming. Moms and dads didn't consent to the flu shot. We're going to take your child away from you. And we see these stories here now in the news media this week. A mother just wanted her baby back until she could get convinced about kidney surgery on her infant. They threw her in jail even though she was still nursing the infant. We see another young man, 16 years old, not so sure he wants all this harsh cancer treatment for a form of cancer he has. And, of course, they're trying to force this treatment on him and his parents. So, you know, the state is taking over. We don't have the ability to make our own decisions or for our own loved ones. So you see this coming. The state has a mentality, and it will make the decisions for you. So.
And that's a rather frightening thing, especially when the influenza shots that they're forcing on so many people actually have a toxic dose of mercury in them. And the more you take every year, why, the more mercury you're going to get. Bill, thanks very much for being with us. It's always a pleasure, and it's going to be exciting to wait and see what happens. I hope our listeners have learned a lot.
You bet. Thank you.
Good night. God bless. Okay, this is Dr. Stan, and ladies and gentlemen, remember what you heard today, and remember how they're coordinating this whole thing to frighten you to death, and you're going to have to decide what you're going to do. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and of course you would like to know more about what we're talking about the problem with the thimerosal. We carry a book called Evidence of Harm, where we have 2/14 sets on mercury. You can ask, of course, for my copies of either this program or my recent interviews with Dr. Ayub and Dr. Geyer. There are effective treatments for autism that are being actively supported. Why would anybody suppress treatment? They could restore health to these tragic children. Why did anybody want to abort 50 million children in America since 1973? There really are evil and wicked people out there. To understand what's going on, let me suggest my talk, Planned Population Reduction. That's Planned Population Reduction. And it's almost two hours and 20 minutes. And you'll learn a lot about this plan program to reduce the population of the world to far less than 1 billion, to kill off the vast majority of the people in the world. And people say, that couldn't be true. Well, you need to get the video. You need to watch it. If you don't want to get that, why, you can go up on my webpage and pull down my population control agenda monograph and check the facts out. See if it really is true. If there really are people who advocate mass extermination, not during the Nazi period, but right today. If you want to know how our government dealt with the Nazi war criminals, you need to get our four tapes out on Operation Paperclip. It goes into how we actually helped many of them to escape to South America. 10,000 of the most violent Nazis were helped to escape to South America by our CIA. The four tapes out on Operation Paperclip. You'll want to get our four tapes out on Skull and Bones, our four tapes out on the Bohemian Grove. We have all sorts of things here that you're not going to get elsewhere. So never talk about vaccines. You want to get our four tapes out on vaccines. You want to get our four tapes out on autism. Because, of course, there are treatments for these tragic children that you're not going to hear about. And then, of course, we hope many of you go to our website at www.radioliberty.com. Remember, we do carry the Miracle products, the Miracle 2 products. We carry the Sanjian Radio. We carry the Robinson Homeschool Curriculum and all sorts of videos and four tape sets and books that you won't be able to get elsewhere. And if you'd like, and of course, we also carry some health products. We carry actually something called Alibiotic that has the elderberry juice in it, as well as, of course, the oil of oregano and garlic. And many of the natural antibiotics, they're called Alibiotic. And if you'd like to know more about it, why, we'd be glad to send you our health catalog, or you can order directly by calling 1-800-544-8927. It's simply a product that carries so many of the things that do act normally as antibiotics, and of course don't have all the consequences of them, and the organisms don't get, of course, resistant to them. Alibiotic, and we do carry selenium and vitamin C, and so many of the products. We do hope you'll want to get them through us, because it helps us as we reach out across America trying to educate people about what's really going on. Now, if you certainly would like to verify the fact, there's a relationship between Alzheimer's disease and influenza shots in the elderly. The reference is Dr. Fudenberg's work. You can go to his website and pull down his page, where he'll point out that if you take three or four influenza shots and you're between 60 and 65, 10 years later, your chance of getting Alzheimer's disease